Now it's time. Time to get your mind moving, reach for your dreams, and find happiness and success in your life. Welcome to The Mindset Man. And here is your host, The Mindset Man himself, Todd Raddis.
Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Todd Raddis. This is The Mindset Man. And today we have Reverend Edie Weinstein. She is an internationally recognized, sought-after, colorfully creative journalist, interviewer, author, editor, speaker, licensed social worker, interfaith minister, bliss coach, I love that one, event producer, certified laughter yoga leader. Now we got to hear a little bit about that. Right. And a certified cuddle party facilitator and a cosmic concierge. Edie is the founder of Hug Mobsters Armed with Love, which offers free hugs at events around the world. She speaks on subjects of wellness, relationship, trauma recovery, addiction, mental health, spirituality, sexuality, and loss of grief. And there's more. Edie is also the author of The Bliss Mistress, Guide to Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary, and co-author of Embrace the Divine, The Emerging Woman's Gateway to Power, Passion, and Purpose. She's also been a contributor to several anthologies and personal growth books, including Taming the Angry Dragon, From Pissed Off to Peaceful. Wow. Welcome to the show, Edie. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Last time I saw you, I wasn't doing so great. I was being interviewed by Larry Steinhouse, and on my way into the interview, as I was healing a boo-boo knee, I thought I was doing well, and I charged up the hill to the office, and I twisted it again. But my knee's all better now. And
that's oh, well, fantastic. Yeah, I remember you were really rubbing on that knee when I saw you.
Yeah.
So you've got another interesting project that I wanted to jump right into to discuss. Yeah. You've got this program that you're trying to get off the ground here. I think you're already working it, correct? The other end of the stethoscope, mm-hmm. Listening to the heart in our care. Is that correct? You're currently doing this program?
Well, I'm putting it together, and the impetus for it, the catalyst, was my dear friend Andrea Johnson, who died December 9th of this year, or of last year, December of 2018. 2 years earlier, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I had seen her through the entire process from diagnosis to her passing, and during that time, we decided we wanted to educate treatment staff, people that work with patients, to find better ways, more efficient, not just efficient, but more caring ways to treat patients. And her career was as a nurse, primarily home care, and I'm a licensed social worker. And both of us have been patients. Hers was for cancer and mine was for cardiac condition. I had a heart attack in June of 2014. So we said, let's join forces and find a way to reach the medical professionals so that they understand this one major concept. Someday, every doctor, every nurse, every social worker will become a patient, whether it's in their youth, whether, you know, or their adulthood, or toward the end of a long life. So what we both found was that when patients are active participants in their care, when they have a heart-to-heart conversation with the staff that's treating them, they get better treatment. So right. That's the intention. My goal, now that she's passed, is to take this myself into medical schools and nursing schools and hospitals.
Okay. You know what? That really reminds me of like the interpersonal relations work I'll do with leaders and business owners, just understanding the people that are around you. And in this situation, it's the doctor really trying to associate with the patient's point of view. Am I correct on that?
Absolutely. And what inspired it even before this went down with both of us was there was a movie that came out, I'm thinking in the 1990s, maybe late 80s, early 90s, called The Doctor. William Hurt plays a surgeon who's top-notch in his field, but he's not very compassionate. He's rather cynical. And he remains that way until he's diagnosed with throat cancer, and he becomes a patient. And that's when he realizes that the clinical training that he had only goes so far. and it's the hand holding, it's the eye contact, it's the you matter concept in medical care that has better outcomes. And there's a place in the Philadelphia area, although there are satellites in different parts of the country, called Cancer Treatment Centers of America, and they practice what they call the mother standard of care, which means that patients are to be treated the way the doctors, nurses, staff would want their own mothers to be treated.
Oh, that's a great approach to getting the mindset of caring. Yeah, because everybody wants to feel valuable and cared for. And when you're sick, yeah, a cold doctor can be something that's hard for a patient to get over. You know, I personally have had a lot of experience with the VA for medical help. And I've had great doctors who were awesome and compassionate, and I had other ones you just wanted to get out of the room with. You didn't even want to talk to them. So I understand that. Now, you have an adage, and you mentioned this when I saw you last time, and it's more about healer, heal thyself. What makes medical professionals resistant to their own advice? I have it written down here, so yes, I am reading. But what does make them resistant? How do they get stuck into that belief system and mindset that they're not expressing that care in a way that's beneficial to the patient?
Okay, you're talking about how the doctors or treatment team can take care of themselves so they can take better care of the patient?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can speak for myself as a social worker, as a consummate caregiver, both personally and professionally. Oh, I don't need it. You know, I'm okay. I'm tough. My mother was the rock in the family who everybody leaned on. And I would say to her often, you know what, Mom, rocks crumble. But I didn't take my own good advice until I started crumbling. So there's this belief that we're invulnerable and invincible. And we're not. We're human. And doctors are the same way. In fact, they're even more inculcated with the idea that they have to be tough, that death is the enemy, that you fight on till the very end, that it's hard to care for a patient if you care too much about them. That's the myth. The reality is when a doctor, a nurse, a social worker, a therapist, whoever is a professional, cares about the patient, there's this, you know, self-protective, but there's a way that we absorb that caring back into ourselves. I know that when I have compassion for clients, and I'm a therapist in a group practice, when I have compassion for my clients, I feel better. I don't feel as helpless. I see us being on the same team. So when doctors, and I'll use them as an example, believe that they've got to be tough, they miss out on healing themselves and they miss out on being better doctors. So it's this belief that people get in medical school that doctors are all knowing, that death is a failure, that they have to do everything at all costs to save lives. And well, sometimes it's out of their hands.
Yeah, I was going to say to view death as a failure, I mean, it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen to every one of us. And
absolutely.
What a mental challenge to come into it with a belief system like that, that if one of your patients dies, it's a failure. Because like you said, it is, death is in our control in some ways, but completely out of it in others. And, you know, we go to doctors hoping for the best and, you know, hopefully they lift us up. So I really like this because I did see that movie you spoke of too.
The Doctor. Yeah.
And The Doctor. That was a powerful movie because they shot that well too. I mean, you really went from this pompous, arrogant, cold doctor to this man who was just hating being treated the way he's treated all of his patients. Right. So it was a very powerful movie. If listeners get a chance, it's one to watch and you'll get the idea of what Edie's talking about here. And now another thing I'd like to know about is what would you view the ideal healing environment being? Well, how would you build that?
Yeah. Well, I had two opportunities to experience it. One was back in 1998. My husband, Michael, died of hepatitis C on December 21st of 98. So we just acknowledged the 20th anniversary of his passing. And he had been in and out of the hospital for years, and he was waiting for a liver transplant. The last hospital stay was at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philly. He was on what was called the MRICU, the Medical Respiratory Intensive Care Unit. And he went in there in a coma on, was it November 11th of 1998, and he died December 21st of 98. And I decided, since he was going to be living there, and I literally lived there for 5.5 weeks, I didn't sleep at home until the night he died. I was going to make it as welcoming an environment for everybody that walked in as possible. So there was always music playing, very relaxing, soothing music. There were pictures of him when he was healthy. There were prayer icons from all different religious traditions. One of my favorite things, which I actually now have in my office where I practice, is a wind sock that came from a vacation to Key West. It was like rainbow streamers. And that was hanging up in the room. It was just a very healing environment. And because he was there during the holidays, we had Christmas decorations. We had Hanukkah decorations. Staff would love coming into his room. Nobody else's room was decorated like that. And it, you know, they when I wasn't there, when I took a few ventures outside the hospital, I would tell the staff, when the tape stops, turn it over. I mean, that was back when we used cassette tapes. And right. I said, when the tape stops, turn it over. There needs to be music playing 24/7 in the room. So that was one healing environment. The second one was when Andrea was diagnosed. She had an amazing attitude, not just a positive, yeah, go get it, kick cancer's butt attitude. But while I'm going through this process, I'm going to make the healing environment as beneficial for me as possible. So she didn't call it cancer. She called it being on the C train, like the letter C. Right. Where you get on the first car with the diagnosis and you move from car to car with the different treatments. She didn't call it chemo. She called it IV medications. And she, when she started losing her hair, we did a ritual at her hairdresser's and he shaved her head, but we had music playing. We had a candle burning. We said prayers. And she had her spiritual tradition was Sufism. So her spiritual teacher, she brought pictures of them for that event. But also when she went for her IV med treatment, she would have their pictures there. She'd have her prayer beads. She couldn't light a candle in the hospital. But she might even have like a little electric candle or something. I don't remember. But music playing. And she also wrote little affirmations that she taped to the tubing that would go into her body. With the medications that would go into her body. Right. And again, staff had said they'd never experienced anything like that. So the ideal healing environment is whatever works best for the patient and potentially for their families. Because family and family could be birth family, family of choice, friends, whoever. Mm-hmm. But it's a healing environment isn't sterile and cold and certainly we need to adhere to standard practices in terms of cleanliness. But when I say sterile, I mean not emotionally sterile.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I actually worked at the VA for a while and I'm a patient over there. And we always found in the department that I worked in, we were actually the sanitation team. Mm-hmm. So we went into rooms while patients were in and when they left. And one of the things that we did was we interacted a lot with the patients. And we didn't go in because we're not nurses or doctors. We didn't go in to talk about their sickness. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were older vets, a lot of World War II vets. And I think you'll appreciate this. We used to go in and just sit down and listen to their stories. Yep. And it would just, their attitudes would be different when you left. And yep. We found that to be a good way to uplift people, especially, like 2 o'clock in the morning when they can't sleep and, they're watching some show they don't want to watch on TV. Whenever we could. I mean, we were busy, but whenever we could, we would try to interact with the vets. And I think that goes a little bit to what you were saying. But yeah, the environment can be very sterile. And I love that idea. I mean, if I was stuck in a hospital room, I would like some of my life with me. Mm-hmm. Because that's a long, lonely period of time when you're laying in those hospital beds.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you've got something really good going there. I'd like to see you be very successful with that and bring that kind of care. But there is something else I want to talk about, and I kind of want to shift gears with you a little bit because I really want to know about a couple of these things that you do. Now, you do bliss coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see where that would work into, but I've never heard of a certified laughter yoga leader.
Okay, I'll tell you about that.
Okay.
Laughter yoga is a modality that was created 23 years ago by a cardiologist in India, Dr. Madan Kataria, and his wife Midori, who's a yoga teacher. They would go to a park in Mumbai and get together with their friends, and they laugh. They tell jokes. And then after a while, the jokes became kind of racist and sexist and not very funny. And then they ran out of jokes. So he proposed the idea, what if laughter, just for the heck of it, did the body and mind as good as laughter at humor and jokes? And she added the idea that the same muscles that we use for laughter are the same muscles that we use for diet, you know, for yoga and meditation. We use the diaphragm. So I'm going to ask you to put your hands on your diaphragm.
Okay.
I'm not hearing any laughter. Come on.
Oh, you want me to laugh? All you got to do is start laughing, and I'll start laughing. I'm.
Okay. So as you're laughing, what are you feeling there?
I always feel good when I laugh.
Physically, in your diaphragm, what are you feeling when your hands are there and you're laughing?
Oh, it just gets warm and, you know, tightens up a little bit, right. But then loosens, yep. And lots of breath going in and out.
Yep. So, yeah, laughter yoga is considered light aerobic exercise. It's not getting stretchy on the mat. There's no yoga mat. There's no twisting yourself up into a pretzel.
Uh-huh.
So he said, okay, let's take a look at its applications for pain, for depression, for anxiety, for loneliness, for working with older people who are isolated, for community building, for working with children on the autism spectrum, for working with little kids, big kids, every way imaginable. Laughter is a universal language, and people don't always laugh at the same things, but when people are laughing together, they build community, they feel a connection. So right now in over 108 countries, there's something like 6,000 laughter yoga clubs. And laughter yoga clubs are where people just get together and they do what he calls the 40 core, C-O-R-E, 40 core exercises. And I think of them as improv exercises. So when people get together and they laugh and they do these exercises, they may be things like, one of my favorites is mental floss. So if you can imagine a big container of with dental floss, except it's to clean out your mind. So you're pulling it out and you're sticking it in your ear and you're laughing and pulling it back and forth. There's judgment laughter where you walk around the room and you wag your finger at somebody and you laugh. And then there's, I made a mistake. I'm sorry, please forgive me laughter. And eye contact is important. Childlike playfulness is important because children laugh something like 100 times a day. We laugh maybe 15, 20 times a day if we're lucky and if we think there's something to laugh about. And people can go to it's laughteryoga.org website. And I've experienced, my training was a year ago, September, and it was local. And there are plenty of, there's my teacher is in Media, Pennsylvania, and her name is Alexa Fong Drube. And so she teaches this a few times a year. And what I loved about her training is that she embodies laughter fully. And the bonus, two bonuses of taking the classes with her, I'm a licensed social worker, and in order to maintain my license, I need to have 30 continuing education credits every 2 years. And I earned 16 credits going to that weekend training and getting certified. And Alexa is also a Le Cordon Bleu trained chef. So she fed us very well. that's laughter yoga.
A Cordon Bleu chef.
Cordon Bleu trained chef, yes.
God bless you. God bless her.
Oh, yeah. She's wonderful. And the whole community is really supportive. People that go to these trainings sometimes have background in education in the helping profession. Some don't. There were a couple of other social workers in the class with me and some teachers. I don't know what everybody did that was there. And it's just remarkable because think about this. When you laugh with people, you bond with them. And even if you don't speak the same verbal language, as I mentioned, laughter is a universal language. So I teach workshops incorporating laughter yoga as well. So it's a blast. So look it up again, laughteryoga.org.
Laughteryoga.org. Yeah, that's awesome. So it's kind of hard for me to clap or move around. I've got a studio mic in front of me. So I'm sorry I didn't join you.
That's okay. Do you look at the videos? Watch the videos.
So, and the last thing that I'm really interested in, because it's something that I believe in. I believe that everything we do connects with the universe, mm-hmm. that all of our thoughts can be manifested. And my belief is that whatever you believe today gets created in the past to help you fulfill those dreams today. Mm-hmm. And that's based on some quantum science work that I've been following for quite a few years. Like, they know now that observation turns the wave into a particle. Mm-hmm. And they also know that it turns the wave into a particle before it's observed. The wave anticipates that. So it changes in the past before. And I started to see that, and I started to believe that. I've always believed the universe will line everything up for you. Mm-hmm. But I now believe that not only will the universe line it up for you, but the universe is capable of rewriting all those little tiny things in history that make what you want today mm-hmm. come true without affecting the bigger picture. And Napoleon Hill, you know, called that the infinite intelligence, and we'll never understand how it's able to do the things that we do. We just have to have the faith that it can. And, you know, other people call it God or whatever you call it. In my opinion, it's the same intelligence. But you have on here that you're a cosmic concierge.
What is that? I don't know what that is. Okay. Like, most things that come to me, most of the titles or insights that I get come either during meditation or dreams. So you think about what concierge does. That's the person at a hotel that gets you stuff, that knows where to find the best restaurant or the best massage therapist or whatever it is that you're looking for. And I'm a connector. I think I come by it naturally. My father grew up in South Philly and he knew everybody. And I absorbed that talent. So I'm also a social worker and I have what I call a Rolodex brain. Somebody will say, do you know where I can find? I say, wait a minute. And I run it through the Rolodex. And I come up with a solution. So I help people find resources. I help them birth their books. I help them find a way to go from seed planting to fruition. And that's part of the bliss coaching that I do as well. And I encourage people to find their bliss, be their bliss while they're doing it. So people pick my brain. In fact, as right before the interview, I was writing an article for the Good Men Project, which is one of the sites for which I write, about picking my brain. That as a cosmic concierge, people pick my brain all the time. So that's what that is.
All right, yeah, because I use meditation for inspiration too. And mm-hmm. I think you said you're reading my book now, so I'll keep it secret. If you want to know, read the book.
Well, thank you.
There's a section in there on how it was a pretty amazing event that brought the inspiration for the three horse idea and philosophy and metaphor. So, but we're running low on time. I personally think these 25 minute shows are getting a little short.
Yep. But
why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you and what the best means are. So if they need you, they can get a hold of you and find you.
Perfect. Okay. My website is www.opti-mystical.com. And where that came from was, again, another download where I was told, you're not just an optimist, you're an optimistic who sees the world through the eyes of possibility. So that's my website. My email address is by divine design, B as in boy, Y as in yellow, divine, D-I-V-I-N-E, by divine design at comcast.net.
Awesome.
The best ways to reach me.
Okay, very good. And they can look you up on Facebook at Snuggle Yoga, correct?
Well, yeah, Edie Weinstein, and it's W-E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N, first name Edie, E-D-I-E, and that's where I post a whole bunch of things that I do, including, as you mentioned, Cuddle Party. And if people want to know more about that, it's cuddleparty.com, because I don't think we have time to go into what
No, we're running
short. Check it out.
Yeah.
Check out Cuddle Party. It's fun.
Oh, yeah, it sounds fantastic. Well, Edie, thank you so much for taking the time out today and come sit with me and support my new radio show here. Thank you to the listeners for tuning in again. We need your support, too. Edie, thank you. You have a wonderful night.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast of The Mindset Man. We greatly appreciate you have taken the time to be with us today. You will be where you believe you will be. You will find the show at toddradis.com or inspirednewsradio.com. Have a great day, and we will see you soon.